Blog Talk Radio.
The following presentation is brought to you by God Discussion. For a schedule of upcoming shows, please visit www.goddiscussion.net. Belief in a cruel God makes a cruel man. Thomas Paine. The way to see by faith is to shut the eye of reason. Benjamin Franklin. The question before the human race is whether the God of nature shall govern the world by his own laws, or whether priests and kings shall rule it by fictitious miracles. John Adams. It is perfectly evident to my mind that there exists a necessary, eternal, supreme, and intelligent being. This is no matter of faith, but of reason. Voltaire. God gave us reason, not religion. This belief is known as deism. The World Union of Deists, which brings you this podcast, is an international organization dedicated to promoting the message of deism.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of God Gave Us Reason, Not Religion, an official podcast of the World Union of Deists. I'm your host, Jason X, and with me tonight is my co-host, Tim Wingate. The main topic of tonight's podcast is deism and prayer. But before we talk about that, I want to do three things. First, I want to mention that December is the last month of the 20th year of the World Union of Deists. The World Union of Deists was founded in Charlottesville, Virginia, on April 10, 1993, by Bob Johnson. We at the World Union of Deists thank everyone who has helped support deism and or the World Union of Deists in any way throughout the years. We look forward to working as hard as we can to get the word out about deism in our 21st year, which is 2014. The second thing that I want to do comes directly from Bob Johnson, the founder and director of the World Union of Deists. Bob asked me to, quote, mention the deistic alternatives to superstition-based Christmas. We can celebrate the solstice, which is in winter for deists in the northern hemisphere and in summer for deists in the southern hemisphere, as well as Trenton Night. Trenton Night celebrates the American rebels persevering through several defeats and then successfully attacking government forces at Trenton, New Jersey. This military action started with the crossing of the Delaware on Christmas night, 1776. Trenton Night should be celebrated by deists and other free thinkers around the world because it transcends the United States. By keeping the revolution alive, the Continental Army made the victory of the American Revolution a reality, which helped to bring the end of religion and government working together to smash free speech and freedom of conscience. Among other things, the victory of the American Revolution forced the British monarchy to be much more cooperative in places such as Australia and Canada. Now, before I move on, Tim, is there something you want to add to those facts?
All right. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. Excellent. Glad to hear it. How you doing, Jason?
Doing all right, Tim. You?
I'm well. Hanging in there. I'm actually having fun being the nursemaid to my wife, who had a terrible fall not too long ago, twisted her ankle very badly, and fortunately she's getting better. We're going to go see a doctor in a couple of days to make sure everything is healing properly, but that's just been the big excitement in my life here the last few weeks.
Well, that'll keep you busy for sure. I played nursemaid as well.
Yeah. Well, she did it for me when I was having my situation, so I'm perfectly happy with that.
Well, when we start talking about deism and prayer, Bob Johnson actually suggested that we talk about your situation, so we'll see if that comes up.
Okay. That sounds like a plan.
All right. So now I'm going to move on to the third thing that I wanted to do before I started discussing deism and prayer. I want to finish reading the rest of the email that I started to read during last month's podcast. This email explains my answer to the question, what can we know about God? After I finish reading that email, we will hopefully get some edifying thoughts from Tim and a caller or two. Then we'll talk about deism and prayer. All right, so here's the rest of the email. I stated in that email that God is one person without gender or human form who purposefully created the universe. What I didn't have time to say is that a person is one thing that is alive and very intelligent. Very intelligent means about as intelligent as or more intelligent than an average human. Simply speaking, a human is a person, but a plant is not, because although the plant is alive, it is not very intelligent. We know that God is a person because we know that God is alive and very intelligent. We know that God is alive and very intelligent because God creates all creation. Creation is everything that God creates, which at least includes the universe. The universe is a masterpiece, the inspiration of every book, sculpture, musical composition, theory, building, painting, etc. in the universe. God must be alive and very intelligent to make such a masterpiece. Mark Twain wrote Huckleberry Finn. Michelangelo sculpted David. George Frederick Handel composed Messiah. Albert Einstein created the general theory of relativity. Ustad Isa primarily designed the Taj Mahal. And Leonardo da Vinci painted the Mona Lisa. The point is that only persons make masterpieces, thus God is a person. Aristotle believed that God was a person, but that God accidentally created the universe. Although Aristotle is generally considered a genius, and he was probably more intelligent than me overall, his conception of God is absurd. How can a person accidentally make or create a masterpiece? Huckleberry Finn, David, Messiah, the general theory of relativity, the Taj Mahal, and Mona Lisa could not have been made or created by accident. They required persons purposefully acting to make or create them. Gender means being either male or female. The main purpose of genders is to combine the genes of two creatures to make a new and unique creature. A creature is anything that God creates that is alive. Genders allow for genetic variety, which generally makes a species better able to survive and evolve. God does not belong to a species, though. There is only one who makes all creation come into existence. Therefore, God has no other God to combine genes with to create a third God. So God is neither male nor female. We know that God is without human form because God has no need for things like hands, feet, eyes, ears, lungs, a heart, or a stomach. God moves things without grabbing, is everywhere without walking, knows what everything looks and sounds like without seeing and hearing, and can live without air, blood flow, and food. God probably just lives and cannot stop living. Do you have any thoughts to share at this time, Tim?
You there?
Yeah, I'm there. I'm waiting for your pearls of wisdom. That's the end of the email. I just finished last month's show.
Yeah, really. Last month's show a month later.
Yeah, we got to do what we can do. I really like the end of that email, so I wanted to share it with our audience in case anyone else can find some value in it too. So that's why I tacked it on the beginning of this month's show.
Yeah. Well, that's not a problem. My concepts on prayer and that is that it's each individual deist is going to do what they want to do. And that's pretty much where it goes as far as I'm concerned. So I say we just dive right in and make sure to give out the phone numbers for everybody so we can get some people calling in.
All right, that's a good idea. We would love to have you call in. Either dial 914-338-0452 or 888-238-8529. please only use the 888 number for a quick phone call because it costs God Discussion more money than the 914 number. I just wanted to say, I think one of the things that I found liberating when I went from being a Christian to being a deist was to stop thinking of God as a bearded man. Not that I ever did that, but, you know, I kept on calling God he out of habit. And I remember there was a big intellectual shift when I started defining God as the ruler of the universe rather than the king of the universe. You know, God, there's not like, you know, there's not a, you know, some big man out there running things. God is very different than any man or any woman. And I'd like to hear that reflected in how we talk about God. But now let's talk about prayer. Let's see here. Before we talk about prayer, I want to read something that Bob Johnson wanted me to share.
Oh, go ahead, please.
All right. Are you hanging on to your chair, Tim?
Oh yeah. I'm hanging on to my chair. I sit with bated breath anytime Bob has something to say, because after all, he is our guru.
The Grand Poobah.
The Grand Poobah. Absolutely.
We love you, Bob.
Yes,
we do.
We really do.
You're doing a great job. All right. Bob says, one quality of deism that seems to make it unique is that it doesn't claim to know specifics about the supreme intelligence, God, such as pantheists who say God is part of everything, or the revealed hearsay religionists who, as you know, say they know many more things about God. Here is a description of God by Thomas Paine from The Age of Reason. Quote, Thomas Paine, in like manner of reasoning, everything we behold carries in itself the internal evidence that it did not make itself. Every man is an evidence to himself that he did not make himself. Neither could his father make himself, nor his grandfather, nor any of his race. Neither could any tree, plant, or animal make itself. And it is the conviction arising from this evidence that carries us on, as it were, by necessity, to the belief of a first cause eternally existing, of a nature totally different to any material existence we know of, and by the power of which all things exist. And this first cause man calls God. All right. Now, anything before we start talking about prayer, and I mean it this time. All right, moving on. Different deists have different beliefs and practices regarding prayer, as Tim mentioned. Some like praying and do it often. Others hate it and don't do it at all. And others are somewhere in between. I am somewhere in between. Often I talk to God when I'm alone in my car, just to have someone perfect to talk to or to have a free psychotherapist. Of course, if God talks back to me, it is not with words that I hear with my ears. Maybe it is with emotions and thoughts. Yet even if God does not talk back to me, such talking seems to help me, so I'll keep doing it anyway. Sometimes I talk to God just to thank God. I think that this is a good practice for me because it cultivates thankful thoughts and thankful attitude within me. Thankful people are happier and more pleasant to be with than unthankful people. Occasionally, I will ask God for something. When I ask God for something, I don't expect a miracle. I just hope for one. Maybe God intervenes in the natural working of the universe, or maybe God doesn't. If God does, God probably does so in a covert way, so that even if God does a miracle, it is debatable whether it was an extreme coincidence or not. I think that asking for God's help can be beneficial as the final act of a series of wise actions. Here's an example. I try to eat right and exercise so that I will have a long and happy life. But I'm still a little scared of dying. I think that almost all humans are at least a little scared of dying, because we know that we will die someday, but are programmed by nature to try to survive. Sometimes when I lay face down in bed, which is often how most easily I fall asleep, I can feel my heart beating in my chest. And this reminds me that someday that heart will stop beating, and I will die. And that's when I feel fear. Well, to help me sleep, I pray to God, God, please help me. Maybe God helps me because of my prayer, or maybe God doesn't. I'm not sure. What I am sure of is that I have done everything that I reasonably can to live a good life, and that I am hoping and trusting in God to help me have the best future that I can have. And Bob here suggested that it might be good to get input from you, Tim, since you almost died from, I'm going to probably mispronounce this, aortic aneurysm, and only 1% of people who go through that survive.
Yeah, it was actually what they call an aortic dissection.
Okay.
And it's just I had an aneurysm in my aorta, which also produced a you have basically, make it real simple, your aorta is your main pipe for blood, and it feeds down through your torso to your legs, and that's it's your main artery. And mine had weakened, and the inner layer, there's three layers, the inner layer had separated from the other two, and thus the weakening caused an aneurysm, which is basically a ballooning of a vessel. It's kind of like, you know, you see a hose that's weakened and a hose that might be ballooning out, you know, if we keep the pressure on, it may break. I was very fortunate in that I recognized something was wrong. It wasn't a heart attack, but there was something wrong. It felt like heartburn. That's what I thought I had initially. And we got to the hospital in time and et cetera, found out that it was operable and everything was fine. And I was to go under. And I mean, literally, this nice young doctor came to me and says, well, we found out what the problem is. You have two choices. And I says, okay, what's that? He says, have this operation or die. He says, well, I guess we're having the operation. But up to that point, I had been, you know, I'd been a deist for a while, and I'd been exploring my cultural heritage of Celticism, being a Celt, mm-hmm. of Scot and Irish and English descent. And actually got some French in there too, so I guess I really got a little bit of it all there, you know, Western Europe when it comes to the Celticness. And so I've been exploring some of the faith traditions, if you will, and getting into that and thinking, well, you know, this is a lot more fun. It's naturalism. It's about nature, and got into studying it. And so by the time this situation occurred, I was pretty comfortable with saying a prayer or a positive thought to whoever or whatever was out there. And mm-hmm. just simply saying, you know, I'm not in control. I don't know if you're in control, but if you are, please help out. But I'm happy to go as a living entity, believing that maybe there is something beyond this existence, doing enough and stepping out of from the petitioning part of this, but just you and I, Jason, and the audience, doing enough study over the years on the theories of quantum mechanics and parallel universes and string theory and all the possibilities. My wife being a scientist and talking about things, I know very well that there's
what kind of a scientist is your wife? Excuse me, Tim. Got me curious. What kind of scientist is your wife?
She's a genetics scientist.
Okay.
She works
cool.
with genetics. Yeah. And so dealing with the subatomic, I know that there's something there that nobody's been able to grasp. I mean, we had all this talk about the colliders and everything, looking for the God spark or the God molecule, you know, looking for all these things on the subatomic level, trying to figure out what is it that holds this universe together? What is it, you know, what is reality? what is our, you know, in reality for us, especially as human beings, is so caught up into our own personal perceptions. What's reality for me is entirely different than what is reality for my parakeet or from an ant.
Yeah.
You see? So realizing that even on this planet, we have a variation of life forms, some that are not even carbon-based, apparently. You know, some of those worms that live in those smokers, you know, those hot water vents at the bottom of the ocean. Those aren't necessarily, as far as I understand, aren't necessarily carbon-based. But, you know, even if I'm wrong about that, the point is that we have such a varied amount of life that has existed, is extinct now, and what we have presently. And to realize that it is such great hubris to assume that we are the apex of any process, evolutionary or not, is to me is hubris. Is just the extreme hubris that we're the top of the line. And especially if the universe, as best as we can determine, has existed for billions and billions of years. To assume that we are it.
Countless planetary systems.
Absolutely. So I don't know what's out there, and even if they're paying attention to me. But just for the sake of just being me and a human and liking my Celtic heritage and the Celtic pantheon of what I believe are the anthropomorphic representations of different aspects of nature.
Mm-hmm.
I prayed and I made a petition, because in many cases that's what prayer is a petition to a higher power to do something. That's basically what a prayer is. In law, you go into the courtroom. And in some jurisdictions, you'll hear people, and we pray the court, which has always kind of just, you know, made me sick to my stomach, because, you know, why should we be praying to some, you know, bearded clown up there who was probably at the bottom of his law class? So,
I wouldn't say that to a judge. Your Honor, you're a bearded clown that was at the bottom of his law class.
Yeah, especially if it's a female judge with one on the same
front. Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. Judge Judy's a bearded clown.
As you can tell, I have no respect for these people. But anyway, the bottom line for me when it came to this thing with prayer and this life or death situation was that I just released myself and let go, because I knew I had no control, nothing. I was going to go out. I was going to go to sleep. And if I woke up, great. Here in the present world, great. If I woke up somewhere else, great. New adventure. How cool. I can dig that. I've been a sci-fi fan for years. So you go to sleep, you wake up.
And if you didn't wake up, no suffering.
No, yeah, exactly. If I didn't wake up, who was I going to complain to? Would I even know I didn't wake up?
No, you
so
wouldn't.
I don't mean to make it lighthearted, but yet on the other hand, when you get into a situation like that, you have no control. And because you have no control, you might as well just let go, quit fighting the situation. And I just threw myself into the arms of what I like to say, the universe. Or since we've watched the whole Star Trek sixology that was playing over the holiday weekend here, you know, I just put myself into the arms of the Force. You know, hope that I had enough midichlorians in my bloodstream to tide me through. But it just came down to I just said a prayer to Dagda and Bridget, two of the personages in the pantheon, knowing that I don't think they really exist as real named entities anywhere, but it was something that was comforting. And this one of the things about prayer that I won't deride anybody for some self-comfort. Whether or not you believe, like others, that many other scientists who have researched prayer and various other spiritual people, gurus, writers, people say, well, you're just praying to your higher self. The sense of God that you have inside your mind is just your higher self. Hey, great. I want to get in touch with my higher self if I can. But I don't deride anybody for wanting to pray and seek comfort from whatever power they believe is bigger than them and may be able to take control of a situation. It just doesn't bother me. I see it maybe as a tool to open up an inner power that is latent within us that we don't completely have nor understand.
Well, that makes sense to me. I believe that the goal of human life is to be as sane, good, and happy as possible. And so we should embrace whatever philosophy or religion helps us to be as sane, good, and happy as possible. And if praying helps us to be as sane, good, and happy as possible in whatever circumstance, we should do it. If not, we shouldn't do it. That's my opinion on the matter.
Yeah, so as deists, you know, because we have so many kinds of deists and so many people, I'm not going to tell anybody you shouldn't pray. Of course, pray. I don't care who you pray to either. It doesn't make any difference. Because, and like my brother likes to say, I don't believe in my God any more than I believe in yours.
Is your brother an atheist?
He likes to think he is, but I think he's more of a little bit more of a deist. He's more open-minded. He likes to play the atheist game because it tweaks people.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
People can flow between these ideas. I mean, maybe at one point during the day you might feel more agnostic, or another point of day you might feel more like a deist. You know, the nice thing about it being a deist is that you can just be completely honest, and if your faith is wavering a little bit, you can say, hey, I'm just feeling a little bit atheistic right now. Or for some reason, I don't know why, Buddhism is making a lot of sense to me. It's not a big deal. We won't burn you at the stake.
Yeah, you're right. When it comes to being a deist, we're free and we're open, and we're not closing any doors, which for me, this is, of course, we've talked about this before. This is why I wouldn't embrace atheism, because, or atheism, because I think it closes doors that it's really assumptive and hubristic to close these doors when you don't really know for sure. I mean, I'm willing to say that I'm a Gnostic agnostic. You know, I know I don't know, but I have a preferential belief system. And see, this is what most people don't realize, is that most faith is a preferential belief system. And so I'm picking the one that I have more fun with. Why should I pick that crummy old, you know, sunstroke desert nomad bunch that the guy's always angry and tells people to kill everybody and causes all kinds of pain and destruction and emotional and psychological abuse? You know, hey, I had plenty of years, you know, under that guy's crap. I'm not going to go that way. I'll go with something a little bit more fun. This is why quite often, and folks who know me on Facebook and some of the websites and things, I kind of like the FSM. Flying Spaghetti Monster, the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Yeah.
Are
you a Pastafarian?
Anything else? Yeah, Pastafarian, yeah. People want, you know, when people really want to push me as to what I believe, I tell them I'm a Pastafarian.
Yeah.
And they go, what's that? I go, oh, we walk around with colanders on our heads.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Pastafarianism myself, too. I also try to understand reality as best as I can, and the best form of how to live, too. And so,
yeah.
I'm not. Of course, I want to have fun and all that, and you know, who doesn't? But I try to embrace you know, what helps me to be as sane, good, and happy as possible. And I found it to be deism more than my inherited religion, which was Eastern Orthodox Christianity, because just deism makes more sense. It doesn't have as many contradictions, doesn't have any as many unnecessary rules to follow, doesn't have as many harmful rules to follow. I mean, if
no doctrine, no dogma.
Yeah. I would say that there are two dogmas. One is one should base one's beliefs on reason, and reason leads one to conclude that God exists. I say that's the essence of deism. Everything else goes.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is, though, back to the concept on prayer, is that prayer is many things to different people. But prayer basically, in and of itself, is a person putting an intention, a desire forward to unseen powers, whatever they are, if they exist. Now, as I said, some people believe it may be your higher self. And in praying, you're focusing, you're using a tool of focus to communicate with your higher self to maybe make this happen, whether it is subtle changes in your behavior and there's a natural cause and effect that follows, or whether something else is going on a subatomic level. We don't know, but what we do know is there have been studies done on the effect of prayer on sick people over periods of time, and basically they have found, as I understand it, virtually no change.
Yeah.
No change. And that is of people praying.
A lot of atheists like to say nothing fails like prayer.
Yeah, nothing fails like prayer. Well,
what's the Christian equivalent of that? Is it like nothing succeeds like prayer? Because it seems like the atheists are twisting the saying.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, it must be something like that, because it, you know, prayer never fails is one of the terms.
You hear that in some Christian circles then.
Yeah. One of the Christian, you know, tent meeting guru guys had that, I think, as a slogan, tagline, punchline for a while. But to me, the concept is its intention. And years ago, I was doing a program with another guy. We had a radio program, and we were dealing with political issues and some of these things. And we had a lot of people calling up because it was kind of a conservative. I really shouldn't say conservative, because it really was. It was a freedom-oriented type of program. And what we were doing is we had people call up who were very religious, you know, Bible thumpers, basically. And they just wanted to make prayers, and they wanted to pray and all kind of, and they were against, against a lot of boogeymen they had in their minds. And especially, this is back during the time where you had the one gal who was got kind of famous because she says she was a witch. And she was casting spells against George Bush or something like that. And I had a bunch of people call up. And
did those spells make him a moron? Because I think it worked.
Well,
I digress. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, what ended up happening is that as they started to go on, they started to attack anybody who did something that wasn't their version of prayer. And they were going against the people who were supposedly casting spells. And I kind of got in trouble with them because I pointed out that prayer is just prayer casting. It's no different than casting a spell. It's intention.
Yep.
You're putting intention out there for something more powerful than you to go do what you're asking it to do. What's the difference?
That reminds me of the fact that when we read the Bible, sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between being possessed by an evil spirit and being possessed by a Holy Spirit. Or what's
the
act
of... The Holy Spirit makes you roll on the floor and laugh and speak in tongues. An evil spirit makes you roll on the floor and just shake and drool. Right,
yeah, right. But even there's this funny passage in the Bible, or two funny passages in the Bible, where it says God caused King David to number the Israelites. That's one, and the other one says Satan caused King David to number the Israelites. I can look up the numbers for you if you're interested. The pagan gods had their prophets. Yahweh had his prophet. And then according to Yahweh's prophets, it was bad to speak by the spirit of a different God's prophet or a different God.
That's the bad divination. That's the bad divination and prophecy and foretelling. That's bad. But if our God speaks to us,
right,
that's the right way.
Yeah, it's bad. Well, here's another thing. It's bad to burn. It's bad to throw Christians to the lion, but it's okay to burn heretics at the stake.
Oh, yeah. Listen, you know, in your Eastern Orthodox, did you learn about imprecatory prayers? Are you familiar with
imprecatory prayer? I'm not familiar with the term.
Okay. Yeah, most Christians... This is a sad fact, but most Christians have really a very basic, almost a kindergarten attitude, and if you were to put it in a grading system, attitude or understanding about what prayer is. They think prayer many times is just, you know, repeating the Lord's Prayer, which is what they claim. You know, when Jesus, you know, taught, you know, Our Father, the Our Father, speaking the Lord's Prayer. They think that's the great example of how to do it. But in the Bible, the example of oftentimes in prayer was that, and also quite often in the Psalms, and many of the Psalms are prayers. They're not just poems and songs in the Psalms. What they are often prayers. And there are a number of what are called imprecatory prayers. In other words, prayers that are calling for a destructive thing to happen, judgment to come down on somebody and something. And
bring more evils upon them, O Lord. Bring more evils upon those who are glorious upon the earth.
Exactly. Yeah, like Psalm, good example, like Psalm 139 says, do I not hate them, O Lord, that hate thee?
God is love.
The funny thing is, the more I deal with some Christians, the more I realize how ignorant they are of their own Bible and their own scriptures. And like I said, I brought up the question, you know, the thing about the Lord's Prayer, but be honest, that's just an instruction he was supposedly giving on how to pray. The actual prayer of Jesus, I think, was in John 17, where he actually was supposedly praying, and it's entirely different than the Lord's Prayer. And it's just, you know, it's these things that tradition have picked up and continued on. And even in the New Testament, I believe Paul wrote about some imprecations. Some people say imprecatories could be considered curses or wishful badness.
Anathemas.
Anathemas, exactly.
That's a word I learned in the Eastern Orthodox Church. The church councils would have anathemas to curse various heretics.
Yes, exactly. And so in Galatians 1 even, there's, I think it's verses 7 through 9 or so, somewhere in there, 6 to 10, something like that. Paul brings up some curses. But one of the better ones, of course, in the Old Testament, like I said, is Psalm 3, is one that has an imprecatory nature to it by David. So back to the story I was getting to. The thing is, these people didn't understand about the nature of prayer, that it's basically intention, what the intention is, and you're calling forth on a higher power to do something on your behalf, whether it's to give you stuff or protect you or cause ill to somebody else, an enemy. And so I wrote this one. And because it was the time, and this was at the time, I think Bush was running the second term. I don't remember. But anyway, it was called Against Presidential Tyranny. And I wrote this really from kind of a deistic mindset. And this is where this is what it was. O creator of equal people endowed with unalienable rights, hear our plea. We have suffered under a long train of abuses and usurpations that evinces a design to reduce us under absolute despotism. Those that were instituted to make those rights secure no longer derive their just powers from the consent of the equal people, but by threat of violence against them. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned the usurper and his minions for redress in the most humblest terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A president whose administration is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to govern a free people. We ask that you justly uphold your laws of nature and be not mocked, but do unto him as he has done unto others. May he reap a bitter harvest of his abuses. May he collect the wages of his transgressions. May the shed blood of the innocents he has injured be an abomination upon his head. Upon your providence, we have firm reliance and ask you to protect us, our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. May it be so.
Eloquent and bitter.
Pardon me?
Eloquent and bitter.
Impressive.
Do you think that was, do you say that seriously or not?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right,
whatever that is.
So different deists have different opinions. I think this is the first imprecatory deistic prayer I've ever heard. I think you deserve a spot in Wikipedia for it.
Well,
we're gonna take a station break for now, and we'll get back to more about prayer. Y'all keep on listening.
God's a big subject. By sharing our stories, we can understand why we believe or not believe, and maybe even find some common ground. From free thought to Christianity, deism to world religions, we have something for you. Our guests include authors, philosophers, scientists, preachers, activists, and folks who have been affected by religious belief in a good or bad way. Log on to goddiscussion.net for our show schedules. There's an at-a-glance calendar there and info on our various hosts and programs.
You were born sinless. Your true freedom from sin is here. Declare your freedom from the myth of sin with your own personalized declaration of sinlessness and certification of sinlessness from the World Union of Deists now. Free your mind, body, and emotions with the irrefutable 11 Reasons of the Declaration of Sinlessness. Enjoy life again. Live sin-free. No more groveling at the golden altars of revealed religionists who designed an imaginary disease just so they could sell you an imaginary cure. Both your personalized Declaration of Sinlessness and Certification of Sinlessness are printed in full color on high-quality parchment paper, shipped in their own black and gold frames, ready for immediate display. Help the World Union of Deists. Spread the light of reason and place your order now. Only $25 plus shipping from the World Union of Deists. www.deism.com. You'll be glad you did.
God's a big subject, and with us, anything goes. Irreverent or humble, have your say. We're the Future's Religious Talk Show in Blog Talk Religion.
Join Paul, Deborah, Rob, Timothy, Jason, Colleen, and more hosts.
Shows every week.
Visit GodDiscussion.net for info or call 914-338-0452. Talk, learn, share, think. The God Discussion Network.
Once again, this is Jason X here, along with my co-host, Tim Wingate. I am the Deputy Director of the World Union of Deists. The World Union of Deists is an educational organization dedicated to teaching the world about deism so that humanity will be as sane, good, and happy as possible. Our website address is www.deism.com. That's www.deism.com. We would love to have you call in. Either dial 914-338-0452 or 888-238-8529. Please only use the 888 number for a quick phone call because it costs God Discussion more money than the 914 number. Now that Tim has shared his anathema prayer, I can't remember the word he was using. What was that word?
Imprecatory.
I'll try to remember that.
Imprecatory. I am imprecatory.
E-R-E, imprecatory. What's the etymology of that word? Do you know?
It's imprecatory. Imprecatory.
We went to different seminaries. anyways, I just wanted to say a little bit more about prayer, and then maybe I'll read something that Bob Johnson wrote, and we'll take it from there. The last thing I wanted to say about prayer for myself was that I have another example of when I did the best that I could and then asked God to help as the final act of a series of wise actions, or at least the wisest actions that I knew how to make. However, this example is extremely personal, so I won't describe it in detail. I just want to mention that this horrible crisis, the crisis I went through, and it's a crisis far worse than most other people will ever have to face, worked out surprisingly well, seemingly miraculously well. Perhaps God was moved by my prayer to help me. If so, I thank God with all my being. Anything you want to add before we hear from Bob Johnson? Tim?
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Okay. Bob wanted to say, like truly intelligent people in all times and places, George Washington realized how very little we know about life and the workings of the universe. He wrote that the ways of providence were inscrutable. That's what George Washington often called God. He called God providence. Yet he did the very best he could in all aspects of his life. When things were dark and it looked like the American Revolution would be lost, he never gave up. Even when people in his own ranks were turning on him and trying to sink him, he persevered because of his deep, heartfelt, deistic belief in providence. George Washington coupled his genuine belief in providence with action. After the American defeat of Germantown in 1777, he said, quote, "We must endeavor to deserve better of providence, and I am persuaded she will smile upon us," end quote. He also wrote that we should take care to do our very best in everything we do so that, quote, "our reason, our conscience approve," end quote. And I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, George Washington, he himself prayed to Providence, didn't he?
Yeah. He was raised, in a Christian worldview at the time, but he, as far as I understand it, he was a nominal attendee. I think he was Church of England at the time. I guess it'd be Episcopalian now. He often just used, like you said, the term providence rather than saying God. per se. We really don't know specifically. There's a few things I'd have to go digging for it to find out what George Washington actually specifically believed. But Washington, the way he wrote and the way he talked, he seemed to be, as far as I could tell, very close to being deistic.
Well, I actually read a biography of him, and I just happened to pick it off the shelf. It was by a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Oh, good.
And it said that like Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin, George Washington was a deist. It says it point blank there.
Oh, the guy, the writer of that on his biography?
Yeah, James Lexner,
We also know, though, that here's another thing, though. We know that George Washington was also a Mason, a practicing Mason. And
yep.
his lodge or whatever, and part of the Masonry belief system is in the architect of the universe, whoever, whatever that is. It depends on which lodge you belong to and which set of discipline, I guess. We know he at least practiced the lodge, the Masonry lodge, in some respects, I'd say that was a more open-ended viewpoint and understanding. I have no real knowledge of Masonry, and I don't pretend to know. We had one guy who once was a member of World Union of Deists who offered to come on the show at one point and discuss, because I had brought it up on some other program, discuss Masonry, and then he just like disappeared. I think he might have, because they're not supposed to reveal secrets of the lodge and some of that. But I thought, well, I wouldn't go that far and try and, there's plenty of sites on the internet where you can find out what they really do behind closed doors from people who have left or, secret cameras and, dug into things. And then, it's not that big of a deal, but I think the cosmology of Masonry's belief system, at least within the United States and within the lodge that George Washington may have belonged to at that point in time, I would agree with that Pulitzer Prize winning author. Not that he
James
got
Flexner.
It right or wrong, huh? Yeah.
Yeah. The book is called Washington, the Indispensable Man. Yeah, I think it's fairly certain that George Washington was a deist. He also was a Mason. Deists can be Masons too. Maybe they can't be 32nd degree Masons. Perhaps there are funky beliefs put on them. I don't know.
don't like the hats.
I'm willing to bet that he prayed. I think most of the founding fathers, whether deists or not, prayed, and of course George Washington, he suffered a lot of setbacks in the American Revolution. I would have prayed in his case, and of course there's that famous
story about him having some kind of a vision when he was out in the woods by himself praying. Whether he prayed or not, I don't care. What difference does it make if somebody prays? It's really, as I said, I think it's intention, whether it's an intention of thanks, whether it's an intention of request or intention of protection. It's really, what are you looking to get out of it? And do you feel better after you did it?
Yeah. Well, here's another quotation. Here's another thing from Bob Johnson. I think Bob Johnson's, and wisely so, is trying to steer us away from relying too much on prayer and not on ourselves. This is the last thing I'm going to read from him tonight. He wrote, "It may be worth mentioning that in the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, Edward Gibbon expressed the belief that an important factor in Rome falling was that so many Romans became Christians, which changed their focus from the here and now to the hereafter, and the here and now fell apart. A big part of that was probably that they thought that instead of taking action to make things better, they could just pray about it, since the Bible says that Jesus said Jesus promised, according to John chapter 14, verses 12 through 14, that after he flew back up into heaven, believers will be able to do all the things the Bible claims Jesus did, plus more, and that anything they ask for in prayer, they would get.
Yeah, like that happens.
Well, first of all,
I have tried to walk on water so many times. It just doesn't work. And I'm not counting ice either.
Yeah. Well, I tried to heal people as a priest. As far as I know, it usually didn't work. There's one family who swears I did it.
One of the things I noticed that Bob likes to put out on emails and various things, you know, are these faith healing failures that unfortunately take children's lives.
And right.
Which I think is absolutely despicable. In fact, I think religious indoctrination of children, especially the Abrahamic religions, in many ways is child abuse. It's mental cruelty, child abuse. But
certainly a lot of aspects of the Abrahamic faith are. Teaching people about burning alive forever, you know, especially if they fornicate or whatever, if they act like human beings.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's just that's a whole other subject, I guess. You know, we could get into the aspects of praying. You know, when you talk about praying for healings, oh my goodness. Now that opens up a whole other thing. There, you know, you got that whole bunch like Benny Hinn.
What a fake he is.
That guy, and then of course you know you've got the Christian version I can't think of his name. Anyway, Joel Osteen, which is the Tony Robbins of Christianity.
I've seen him.
Yeah.
He's largely doctrine free, right? Just says pleasant stuff.
Well, yeah, kind of. The interesting thing was the old man. I remember watching the old man, his dad, before Joel inherited the whole thing and got that. He was a assembly. I think he came up through the Assemblies of God. And, you know, basically what Osteen's doing and many others are doing is not only a form of neuro-linguistic programming, but it's also this name it, claim it. It's really Christianity light and God wants you rich and famous type of thing. And you can basically have whatever you want.
Supply-side Christianity.
Yeah, supply-side Christianity, yeah. And it really works for the people who manage to set up a not-for-profit corporation of which they and their family members are the board and run everything and get donations and tell people God's going to bless them if you give us, you know, give God your 10%, which means give us the 10% you make on your gross.
There's a sucker born every minute.
Yeah. That's good old P.T. Barnum saying. The other great one I like that P.T. Barnum did is he put up a sign and said, "This way to the egress."
What's that mean?
Exit.
What's an egress?
Exit.
This way to the exit?
Yeah, this way to the exit. So people walk out and they'd be locked out. They'd walk out. If they wanted to get back in, they'd have to pay again.
Oh. Yeah, he was quite the businessman. But I guess the thing is about deists, and now I'm going to make a generalization here, is that deists base their beliefs on reason, which means that they align their thinking with science. And so when they have a problem like a medical issue, they go to a doctor and try to get it fixed. And maybe they pray afterward, or maybe they don't. Whereas there are some Christians and other revealed religionists who might focus on the prayer first and even, you know, slack off on trusting science and medicine. And of course, that can have tragic results. You know, many children have died as because they haven't been taken care of by their devout parents, et cetera.
Yeah.
Well, let's see here. It is exactly 9 o'clock, Tim, and I'm going to give you a choice. I have said everything I want to say about prayer. Is there anything else you want to say about prayer?
No, I was hoping we might get some calls.
Yeah, where are you, people?
Who may be wanted to throw in their 2 cents worth on the idea of prayer maybe some other deists that are out there. Maybe they have a different viewpoint than we do. We'd welcome you to the discussion. Needless to say, Jason and I don't, you know, hold all the answers or all the opinions on what deism is. I think there's many different opinions, and I think there may be some anecdotal stories of people who have prayed and the prayers come true. I'm not sure that that's anything more than an anecdotal story, but I think it's a great story if it happens. It's, you know, I don't know what happened. And I'll be honest, Jason, I've had circumstances, situations where I prayed, believing, thinking this was going to happen, and something did. Things went well. Being somebody who's of a Celtic mindset and open to naturalism and powers that I don't understand but may be there, I like to cast a prayer of protection around myself and my family. I don't know if it does any good or not, but I certainly willing to try and open it up and say, you know, hey, help. There's bad people out there. We need some help and some protection. Do what you can do.
Yep. Well, I can tell you a funny prayer story from back in the day when I was a priest.
Go for it.
Want to hear that?
Sure, why not?
All right. Well, I was a rookie priest in a parish where I was following the priest who was there for the last 40 years, mm-hmm. and he was still a member of the congregation. So things were rough because this guy thought, oh, I'll get a guy fresh out of seminary, and I'll be able to retire and yet control the parish by controlling this priest, this new guy. And that didn't work well with me.
Huh.
And so we're having much turbulence. Well, one of the things I hate is clutter. And this church had lots of clutter, lots of icons just laying on the floor all over the place. The sacristy where the vestments were kept just had a bunch of stuff that was not needed. I thought, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to clean up these vestments and liturgical items when I know they're not being used, and I'll get rid of them, and this place will be a lot neater. And I thought to myself, you know, all I have to do is get through Lent, and then I don't have to worry about any of the purple stuff, because purple is the color of Lent. And so I got through Lent, and there was this purple cloth. I thought, gee, what the heck is this for? I'll get rid of it. I had forgotten about Holy Week. I had forgotten about Good Friday when the purple's brought back.
Yeah.
And this purple thing, purple cloth, was supposed to be put around an icon of Jesus and carried in a procession that's very moving and beautiful. What happened was I was at home. I got a call from this wonderful woman who used to be a member of my parish. And she said, Father Jason, we have a problem. I said, what's the problem? And she said, well, we can't find the purple thing. And my heart started beating fast. I thought, oh, no. I threw away the purple thing, the purple cloth. I said, and she's panicking. She's panicking because it's the holy purple cloth.
The and, holy purple cloth.
And
should offer to give her a purple nurple.
That would have gone over well. Well, anyways, I said, well, I'll be there shortly. So I got in my car, I drove, hoping that maybe I didn't throw away the purple thing. I filed it, put it in some drawer. And I got there and couldn't find it. I was certain I'd thrown away the purple thing. Now, on the way to driving to the church, I was praying harder than I ever prayed before, because small parish politics can be brutal. And I was under some very brutal parish politics, as I was saying before. And I had a lot of people out to get me, which hurt not just me, but my family, who I was taking care of. So I wanted to, you know, not have any more problems than I did. Well, that's when, let's see here, I said that prayer, and then this woman's uncle, whose name was Ray, cornered me. And he said, Father Jason, where's the purple thing? Do you know where it is? So I was cornered, and I had a choice. I'd either tell the truth and have horrible political consequences, or lie and break a vow that I made that I'd never lie again. I made a vow saying I'd never lie again. And I was about to tell the truth. I was going to say, Ray, to tell you the truth, that's what I said. And then all of a sudden, some other person said, hey, Father Jason, there's some guy here to see you. I said, excuse me, Ray. So I left Ray without telling him about the purple thing. And there was this crazy guy who had just shown up off the street. And apparently he floats from church to church trying to do God's will. And well, he answered my prayer. I got saved from revealing that I threw away the purple thing. And I got saved from, you know, lying. Why?
Okay,
because well, that was coincidence.
I'm waiting for the punchline.
Oh, well, okay, if you knew this guy, what happened was I was going to have to either lie or admit to Ray that I threw away the purple thing, and right then, right when the words were about to come out of my mouth, somebody said to me, another person said, hey, Father Jason, there's a guy to see you. I said, oh, excuse me, Ray, I got to get going. And it was this crazy guy, never saw him before in my life, and this is how crazy the guy was. He was African-American, and the parish was Arab-American, and he's showing up, which is kind of odd. We'd have some people who were Ethiopian from Ethiopia, but an African-American guy wouldn't have too much. And this guy, he started attending services with a T-shirt on his head tied with a shoestring. So he looked like he was wearing an Arab headdress. Nobody in the congregation wore an Arab headdress. That's like Saudi type of thing. We're pretty much Arab-Americans now. But this guy showed up right at the right time, and you know, who knows? Maybe it wasn't an answer to the prayer, but it was just kind of funny being saved by a kook like that.
What do you mean? You mean he saved you because you didn't have to answer the question?
Yes.
Is that what you're telling us? He didn't have the purple thing? He wasn't
I threw it out.
And he found the purple thing?
That would have been a good story, too. Hey,
that
would have
been
God told me to bring
story,
this.
Story, Jason. All you did was avoid answering the question. I'm not sure that's an answer to prayer.
I'm saying I think it's coincidence. I believe it's coincidence, but I think it's a funny prayer story. I don't know.
Oh.
All right, well, here's the choice I was going to give you, Tim.
Yeah.
Now, we can either call this a night, or you can start talking about miracles. I've got a couple of short things written on miracles, and that could be like a springboard to talk about that. It's up to you.
Miracles. Boy, that's a big subject. You mean in response to prayer? Miracles in response to prayer? Spontaneous healings that have occurred?
No, I was... I'm done saying what I want to say about prayer. This is kind of funny. I'm a teacher by trade, and I always plan on more than what I'll probably teach. But you never know how short or quick a lesson will go. Sometimes a lesson that's supposed to take 50 minutes takes 10, and all of a sudden, uh-oh, not what I'm going to do with these kids.
Right.
So really, I was thinking about talking first about miracles in general, and then I was going to talk a little bit about miracle stories, or we can just call it a night. What do you think?
I'm perfectly fine with calling it a night, because if we haven't gotten anybody calling in, and I know we've got a few people on the discussion group. Come on, any of you guys in the discussion. Anyone want to jump in? Give us your opinion on prayer. Love for you to jump in. I don't know if you're using the blogger or Skype or whatever, but you can Skype in very easily. And how about giving out those phone numbers again there, Jason?
All right. This is your last chance, people. At least that's the plan.
Yeah.
Dial 914-338-0452 or 888-238-8529. Please only use the 888 number for a quick phone call, because it costs God Discussion more money than the 914 number.
All right. We'll talk for
anyone? Bueller?
anyone? Bueller. Yeah. I forgot about that. Bueller. That's true. Oh, man. You know, just to touch on this thing of prayer, it may not be such a big discussion for a big importance for people, because by the time they get to where we are and on God Talk and...
We got a caller.
We got a call? All right.
Hello, Dune.
Hi.
It's an answer to prayer. We got a caller. Thank you.
You guilted me with going my daily going to hell threat.
Oh, I love that.
But actually, I do have a question. Let's see if I can get this out.
Okay.
Now, deists generally do not believe in the supernatural, correct? As far as, like, the miracles and all that, right?
Yeah, most don't.
Okay. How, then, would you justify prayer? Because I know there's different types of prayer, but in general, are your prayers just prayers of thanksgiving, then?
You
can only speak for yourself, but...
If you want, Jason, then you can... Finish it up.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Tim.
Okay. First of all, I would have to say most deists don't believe in superstition.
Okay.
Some do not believe in the supernatural.
Okay.
I believe in the supernatural, in that the literal definition of the word being super above.
Right.
Nature,
beyond nature.
And that which we consider to be supernatural may just be an extension of nature that we don't understand yet. So, and this is why I referenced the talk about the information about quantum mechanics and string theory and vibrations. We know that everything exists at different frequencies. We are all vibratory. There's an aspect to this science that we in the Western world usually reject, because it's not as repeatable in the laboratory and not as easily believed, because it's not repeatable in the laboratory per se. We tend to say it doesn't exist because we can't replicate it. Okay, if you can't measure it, you can't quantify it. It's
theoretical.
The scientific method,
it's
just theory. But yet in the Eastern tradition, there is a lot of belief in vibratory medicine. And there was a guy named Royal Rife, I believe, who even started to experiment with sound and sound vibrationary medicine, treating injuries, treating wounds, diseases using sound therapy. And now today we have all kinds of sound therapy available if you want on the internet. You have the whole new study in the neurology of binaural beats.
Right, I use binaural beats.
Yeah, exactly. So we have an aspect to nature that most people aren't familiar with, because they're not seekers. And they're perfectly happy to, you know, their beer and their football game, and they're perfectly happy with that and do what they're told and buy what they're told to buy. And, you know, the reality is as the talking head on the TV tells them it is. But many of us, on the other hand, are seekers, and we're seeking out truth, mm-hmm. seeking out knowledge and information, and we realize there is something that probably or seems to be, at least anecdotally, if not historically, that seems to be above nature, more to nature than what we've been told in our Western science application of things. And therefore, I believe in the supernatural. I'm not ready to say that it's, you know, this is where miracles and all this, you know, I just think it's an extension of natural science that we just don't understand yet.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was driving at, because for me, although I call myself an atheist because it's just simpler that way, because I don't believe in definitely do not believe in the Abrahamic concept of God. I mean, I ditched that years ago. I mean, I went to deism first, and then I went to Gnosticism, and then eventually to atheism. But 3 years ago, I had some, we'll say, supernatural experiences that I could not explain. And trust me, I've tried in 3 years. But I also realized, too, that although I don't believe in a Abrahamic concept of God, I do sort of, kind of, accept a deistic view towards, like, and I'm just throwing this word out because I don't have a better word, of a cosmic conscious.
All right. Nothing wrong with that.
You know, so for me, but I'm very deistic. You know, I don't believe it was a creator type entity or anything like that. But that, I mean, that, you know, it's like you said, I mean, I'm a seeker. I mean, you can ask Robin Jean. My nose is usually in a book 24/7. But
a bookie.
Yes. And that's like,
hey, my Uncle Sufa was a bookie, too. Oh, we're talking about something else. Go on.
No. My game. But, yeah, I mean, I think this one of the things I like about the way you guys present your show is that you're not closed-minded. You're not dogmatic about your deism, if that makes any
sense.
Well,
we're truth seekers, and if I was convinced that God did not exist, I'd stop calling myself a deist. That's all there is to it. And I mm-hmm. don't think I'd lose any sleep over it either, you know. I'm out to embrace the truth.
Yeah, exactly.
And whatever that is, and I hope at some point we get to know what that truth is.
Yeah.
But you know, there's no guarantee.
Exactly.
I wanted to ask you then, you know, you say you just kind of are you tongue in cheek atheist, or are you really, you believe there is no God?
Well, see, okay, here's one of the problems I have, especially with atheism as a whole. I don't believe in atheism plus. To me, all being an atheist is I do not believe in God. That's it. Plain and simple. None of this other garbage, none of this other dogma. Do I know? No, I don't know. I'm in. That's why I...
Well, let me then ask you, when you say you do not believe in God, what is God then to you that you don't believe in?
Well, as I said, I specifically limited it to the Abrahamic concept. Because to me, if that's God, what's written in the Bible, we got problems, people.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, then I'm an atheist, too. Yeah. I'm an atheist when it comes to... Yahweh, the Trinity, Zeus, Odin.
Yeah, exactly. But
I don't know. I don't know. I kind of like. Odin. You said he
like
promised to get rid of the ice giants. You don't see any ice giants around anymore, do you?
That explains it, doesn't it?
As far as what we today call mythology, do I think any of those are true? As far as an actuality, no. I mean, come on. Even the Athenians during Homer and Hesiod's day didn't even believe that those were stories.
No, no, they did. They did.
Okay.
They
knew.
You're right. You're right about
unless,
that.
Unless you take Euthyphro, and I happen to bring this up because I'm in the middle of dissecting Euthyphro. I mean, unless you are like Euthyphro, who, if you look at it, you can compare to our fundamentalist religion people today. He
sure.
was very dogmatic. He believed that those stories were true. But most Athenians, other than him, didn't. They accepted them for what they were. They were mythologies. They were stories. Is there a kernel of truth? Well, they do say most mythologies are based in some part on truth. But I think what it goes back to, if you trace the history of religion, and you trace it all the way back, and I'm talking, you know, I don't know if you know what the Venus of Willendorf is. It's a statuette from, like, 250,000 B.C.
That's the one without the arms, right?
Oh,
yes.
Wait a minute. Human beings couldn't haven't existed that long.
you're going
the same direction. I'm a person who accepts the possibility of the alien astronauts, the possibility that...
Oh, I don't accept that at all.
Well, why not? I mean, let's just say human beings only evolved out of the goo,
As far as
how do we know we didn't get a jump start from something else out there? I mean, it's statistically possible.
Okay, statistically it's possible, but my problem with the ancient astronaut theory as it's presented today...
Oh, yeah, with crazy hair?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but it is, in my opinion, the basis of an us versus them mentality, and it dumbs down our ancestors.
Well, it's also faith-based because everything has to be because of the aliens.
Yeah, they're replacing God with aliens.
Yeah.
Tim, I got
a question for you. I've read in a couple of books, one by Carl Sagan, one by Jared Diamond, that human beings and chimpanzees share about 99% of the same DNA. If that fact is true, that assertion is true, where is there room for aliens to alter the evolution of human beings?
Well, you have different theories and different people theorizing on what it is, but it's not, we have similar DNA, but there was a common ancestor somewhere that was altered. And the chimpanzees went on to be chimpanzees, and humankind went on to become humankind. And who and what that thing was that occurred, and I couldn't even tell you the thousands of years ago that supposedly it happened. That's where the theory starts with the idea of DNA manipulation. And we're just starting to understand our DNA, and for you, there's just so much to it. I mean, yeah, they mapped the genome, but it's basic. It's a very basic map. There's so much there. And for years, they used to call it junk DNA. Now they're finding out that there's a whole bunch of stuff in there that we don't understand. The capability of information storage within just the DNA molecule itself is enormous. It put any of our computers to shame, the amount of information.
Oh, so you kind of favor a theory that's kind of like 2001, where there are a bunch of apes there's an intervention
I don't know.
Or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know, but I think that our cut and dried evolution only doesn't quite cut it either, and I don't go off the deep end with Giorgio, whatever his name is, the guy with the crazy hair, and I think there's they've got something, but they're so dogmatic about it having to be, alien involvement. I'm not sure, and I mean the other thing that gets me is you want to get into the strange, off. Regular science and Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster type stuff, you can get into the whole Hollow Earth theory too, and that there's something going on there, and we don't know. And the problem is that we think we have free access to so much information, And it turns out a lot of it's blocked. A lot of it's stopped. And we don't know why. And, of course, then the fact that it's stopped and we don't know why gives rise to suspicion and theory. And then that it extrapolates from there. I'm just simply saying I think that there's the possibility that there may be other life forms out there. Who and what they are, I don't know. Are they bigger and greater than us? Maybe they are. Did they intervene in the past and set us free, kind of the watchmaker god that Tom Paine talks about? I don't know. And see, that's the thing I like about being a deist and believing that there's something out there, but I have no clue as to what it is.
Hey, Dune, while we've got you on the line, is there anything else you want to say at this point?
No, I was just curious as how you guys looked at the prayer, which you pretty much answered. So.
Well, I didn't give my answer.
Yes, I'd like to hear yours.
I'm going to kind of recap what I said before, and I'm going to add something. Actually, I'm going to start with something I haven't said before, and that is that before I could even think, I was raised to pray. I was brought to church and baptized, and just constant praying going on. And my family prayed a lot, too. So I think it's really part of my psyche to pray. And I think that it would be psychologically damaging for me to, like, force myself never to pray again. Because this is how I've been raised. This is how I am. Mm-hmm. I can say that as a deist, I try to minimize the praying as much as possible. I try not to ask God for anything. However, I used to have dreams that would upset me,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't seemingly upsetting, on the surface. I gave up being a priest, but I dreamed like I was a priest again. I wake up all upset.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw on PBS this show about Sigmund Freud, and Sigmund Freud used to psychoanalyze himself by talking to these statues of Egyptian deities.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, that's a good idea. So now every time I have a dream, when I'm in the car, I talk to God because that's my free psychologist.
Right.
And I explain exactly what happened in the dream. I explain my honest interpretation, and then I say what I think I should do about this. And I think that's if talking to God is the definition of prayer, that's my main type of praying. But I will occasionally delve into, God, help me to deal with this situation, or God, please help this person. Sometimes this is kind of weird. An ex-girlfriend of mine called me up. I hadn't talked to her in about a year and a half, but she said, "Hey, I remember that you were a priest." Of course, this was after I was being, I didn't date her when I was a priest. she said, "I'm going through a hard time. Would you pray for me?" I said, "Sure." And so I just said, "Hey, God, would you help her out? That way I'm not lying." So I don't take prayer very seriously, but on one hand, but on the other hand, it's how I was raised. So I don't cut it myself off from it. I find it free psychotherapy, and then what the heck, I got nothing to lose to pray and ask for something sometimes. So that's my belief about prayer.
Well, I think, too, I think it's – I don't want to go so far as this Nicholas Wade's idea of the faith instinct, but I think it is kind of, we'll say, ingrained in us. And it goes back. It goes all the way back to goddess worship, as I said, with the Venus of Willendorf being one of the first. And I think it's just so naturally ingrained in us that they're, that's how the mythologies came around. It was their explanations for lightning and the storms and tornadoes and hurricanes and, the season stuff. And I think it just over time it developed with a little bit of help from mankind and a little bit of absolute power corrupts absolutely. To borrow from Machiavelli, but I think in all of us, for me, when I first started deconverting, most people think I woke up and borrowed from Nietzsche and said, God is dead. it's like, no, deconversion. Some people I do know have done that. They just woke up one day and said, I've done, I'm done with it. And they just went on with their life. But for me, it was a good 3 to 7 year process when I finally actually out loud admitted to myself that I no longer believed in God. But I still, even today, Like, especially after what happened to me 3 years ago when things were really bad, I went down to, I have a spot down by the creek where I live, and I just remember chucking rocks into the creek, and finally, after about 400 rocks, I laid down, and I just looked up at the sky, not really saying to anyone in specific, I said, that's it, I'm done. Do with me what you want. Well, that was almost 4 years ago. So I kind of...
And then, what happened when you said that? Were you expecting
I was
to maybe
up.
Be struck by lightning or something?
Know. Well, probably. I was pretty delusional at that point. But basically, you know, I said, you know, my whole thing was that I'm done. I can't do this alone. If there's something out there, whatever you may be, a he, she, or an it.
Yeah, I'd say an it. But go on.
You know, but...
I say he should.
Yeah, he should, yeah.
Bless you.
Yeah, but, you know, to me, I mean, and I even catch myself, like, you know, because of where I am, even though I'm an atheist, I do consider myself to be spiritual. I mean, I'm sorry, look up at the night sky. Yeah, it's kind of awe-inspiring, or as you were talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, it's kind of hard not to feel looking
yeah.
at a nice, clear night sky.
Or watching a butterfly, or if you want to get even funkier, like you were saying about the quantum physics and, you know, string theory and all that, to me, that's very awe-inspiring. Don't understand half the crap, although I'm trying. But, you know, to me, that's what spirituality is. And being a seeker.
I think anyone who is a real truth seeker, it just has a real spiritual vibe about the person. There's
mm-hmm.
this guy who's an atheist. I bet he's what do you call it? He's a strong atheist. He's a strong atheist,
mm-hmm.
but I can't help but get like a spiritual vibe from the guy just because he's such a good, honest person who's a truth seeker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think truth seeker is the key word, and I think a lot of
yeah.
people lose that. And I don't remember. I was listening to a podcast. It was from a couple years ago. It was like from 2008, and the person that was doing the podcast was talking about deism and saying how that basically deism was dead, and you know he couldn't understand how it all works. But I think what he was missing, and I don't know if his views have changed. I haven't heard him speak on it in the last 4 years, although I'm behind on his podcast. And I think you guys show it's that seeking of truth and being a truth seeker that I think is what keeps deism alive.
Thank you very much. I also think that just deism makes sense for a lot of people. A lot of people think,
mm-hmm.
you know what, reason is the best way to go. Granted, this faith
mm-hmm.
stuff is awful, but I still believe in God. Those people
mm-hmm.
are deists.
Right.
Hey, we got a new caller. Hello, new caller. What's your name?
Rihanna.
How do you
Hi,
spell
Rihanna.
Your name?
Rihanna with an M. M-R-I-A-N-A.
M-R-I-A-N-A. Hi,
Rihanna.
Okay.
Didn't know, please.
That's a tough one to say. Anyways, what would you like to tell us?
Well, I was just saying, since you guys are putting out the idea of deism, let's throw out
yeah.
there the idea of pantheism, all God. So what if the mm-hmm. universe were star stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
What if the universe was what was precipitated that created everything, which would lead to the cosmos, in this case, being all God, for want of a better word. All right, so going on evolution, so why wouldn't it be possible that the universe was capable of doing all these things that we see today?
Tim, do you want to answer that or you want me to?
Well, go ahead, Jason.
All right. I think that the word God is used in a couple of ways, and I think one of those ways makes more sense than the other way. I think that when we say the word God, what we should mean is some being that purposely created the universe. We shouldn't mean a force like gravity. If you talk about God like a force, say a force. That's what I think. Now, I think it's possible
that the universe is alive and is God and somehow is arranging itself purposefully to create life on Earth, for example. But I'd say that anyone who believes that the universe is God and God is the universe and that God is purposely creating God's self is a pandeist. However, I'd say that if someone believes that God is just a force, has no intelligence, no will, then I'd say that person really doesn't believe in God, and I don't even think that person is a pantheist. There's no theist in it. What do you think about that? I'm going to mispronounce your name so hard. So sorry, Rihanna.
Well, I was just thinking, did early man intentionally procreate? Did they even think about it?
I don't think that was...
How would we know? How would we even know how to be able to answer that question?
Even today, some people don't even think about it, and they get a surprise, and, you know, it's not always intentional. So...
Did they intend to have sex? Okay, maybe. But did they intend to procreate, you know, intentionally? I don't know if they put it together or not, but, I don't have any problem with being a pandeist or pantheist or any of these things, because really we're all just speculating anyway.
Yes.
And we can believe what we want to believe, but as to what really is, hey, I don't have a big problem with pandeism or the concept that we're all stardust and we're all connected to in some capacity. The problem is that where is the intellect? Where is the will? Where is the consciousness in all this? And maybe this is something we struggle with or don't understand because we're all inside our own heads. And the only way we can communicate with somebody else inside their own head is through some mechanical means of communication. And I mean mechanical, I mean using our lips and our tongue and breathing our lungs and the vibrations through the air that we hear with our ears. I can't just put my head next to your head and think a thought to you or sense or really hear your thoughts and you hear mine. We don't have blended consciousnesses here. Now, some people claim they can and claim they do, and good for them. I don't know if they're good body language readers or they're more sensitive to pheromones and things that the body gives off, that, I mean, all natural type things. I don't know if that's true or not, but really reading the thoughts or being inside of somebody else's head or them being inside of my head, I've not yet experienced that. And I've tried. I've tried that.
Well, does a tree have a consciousness?
We don't know. How do you know? We don't know.
Well,
I know.
I would say probably not because it doesn't have a brain.
My Celtic heritage does say that everything has consciousness, even rocks.
The Gaia hypothesis.
Well, yeah, but I don't know if it's true or not.
Exactly.
But, well, I don't even know if rocks have a gender or not.
Well, you know, it doesn't make any difference to me whether it's true or not. What's important is how we conduct our lives with each other.
That I can agree with.
Yes.
And so...
I still think these are all concepts, though, that we throw out there and say, you know...
Well, this is why I mentioned that, I have a preferential belief system. I know what I prefer to believe is true. I can't prove it's true, but it's just something I choose to believe that this is the way it is. And I'm comfortable with that. And as long as I'm comfortable with that, I'm a happy guy.
So you're happy with your human concept of deity?
I'm happy with that because it makes me a nice person.
Well,
makes me an agreeable person to get along and do good things, live a happy and a productive life.
So you have to believe in a deity to make yourself a good person.
No. No.
Oh, okay.
Goodness comes from within. Goodness is who you are. You don't need a deity threatening you or rewarding.
Yeah, but you just said that it makes you a good person.
No, my belief does. My preferential belief makes me a good person, not a deity.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think, too, with coming at it from a deistic perspective, or even just as a free thinker, is that it opens the doors to the possibility of expanding our knowledge. Whereas when you're very dogmatic in your belief, you're basically closed-minded. Not, it's, you know, God said it, I believe it, that settles it. With deism, and I'm borrowing that line from Dave Foda, by the way, who is not in chat, and I'm going to yell at him. But, you know, we were talking about the whole divine command theory.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's proposed by William Lane Craig, and that's how he summed it up. God said it, I believe it, that settles it. Deism, you don't have that, I mean, or being a free thinker, because you're open to the fact that there may be something more, we just can't, quote, prove it.
Yeah.
I would like to say, though, that it's really important that we use our reason as much as possible, and as soon as we find something that we're pretty sure is a fact, that means a truth, that we cling on to that and we gather up as many of these facts as we can, and we only accept assertions that don't contradict those facts.
Mm-hmm.
Skepticism is the best default position.
Yeah.
And for me, reason was an escape. It really helped me to get out of a situation where I was believing nonsense. And those who can believe in absurdities can easily commit atrocities.
Voltaire.
Yep, Voltaire.
Yeah, paraphrasing them.
Well, and to bring in a point that Mariana had was, too, is who's to say that we're not still evolving?
Yeah.
To the point where... psychically, we will be able to communicate without having to use our voice, you know, physical voice. You know, I mean, although some people think we're devolving.
Yeah. I think in some cases we are.
I think it's the politicians and the political parties that are devolving.
Yeah, no, they're sitting there going, hoo, 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 hoo.
Yeah, but who's to say that we're not continuously evolving? I mean, we are mammals by default. We are animals by default, as much as the creationists, you know, hate to admit it. You know, we just have the voice of reason and being able to use our higher thinking skills over, you know, and we're able to vocalize them. You know, I just kind of look at it that, you know, keeping that your mind open, avoiding the dogmas, and whether it be atheist dogma, because I do know some atheists that are very dogmatic, and I think we all do, you know, but keeping open the possibilities, you know, and like you said, supporting it with reason and with, you know, facts to the extent we can, and being open to new possibilities.
Yeah, I have great respect for atheists who say, you know, I'm an atheist, but maybe God exists. And I have great respect for theists who say, I believe that God exists, but maybe God doesn't exist. Maybe atheists are right. And I don't have much respect for atheists who say, I'm absolutely certain God does not exist. And I don't have much respect for theists who say, I'm absolutely certain that God does exist. It shows a closed-mindedness.
Yeah,
I
mean, I'd be a fool, and not to take Pascal's wager, but, you know, to say that I know for a fact that there is no God.
Well, I don't know for a fact. For all I know, the universe could be a deity.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, for all we know, we don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, 28 to 32 years, that's all I believe. I mean, to the point where, you know, I went to school for Bible and theology to become a youth minister. Obviously, you know, but then I read Age of Reason.
That was fiction.
<That's fun. laughs>
Yeah. Why they ever gave us that book in college, at a Christian college, no doubt. We were instructed to read Age of Reason. I don't think they were expecting the result they got from me, but oh well. You know. So
that
would
have been better than any book that I had to read at seminary.
Yeah. We won't go there. But, yeah, I just think it's important, you know, and I say this, I've said this to Rob, too, I mean, with his show, I mean, I think it's important that different ideas like this get out there, you know, and keep an open mind and don't shut your brain off just because Joe Blow in the pulpit tells you to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the worst thing religion does, insisting that this is the right religion. And their God is the only God and the right God and all this other stuff. And that if you even peek into other religions, you are sinning. I think that is the worst crime on earth because it leads to closed-mindedness.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get to experience the smorgasbord of everything that is out there by way of human thought.
Yeah.
You know?
You're absolutely right. And I want to take this moment to attack Pascal's Wager. Pascal's Wager, it's based on a couple of assumptions. One is that God wants us to believe that God exists. Pascal's thinking about the Christian God here.
Yeah,
maybe
don't forget,
the real God couldn't care less. Or maybe the real God wants us to be honest. What happens if the real God prefers honesty and reason rather than blind faith? Well, then Pascal's Wager falls apart.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Also, there's another real problem with Pascal's Wager is basically Pascal's saying that, okay, you should become a Christian so you don't burn in hell in the event that hell exists. But
mm-hmm.
being a Christian kind of sucks. So if you're believing in nonsense and you're following rules that you really don't want to follow, you know, you can't have as much fun, well, then you've made and it turns out that Christianity is not true, you've made a bad choice, even though you've chosen what Pascal's directed you to choose. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you have to remember, though, with Pascal, he was actually an apologist for the church. I mean, he was writing from a Christian perspective. He was not a non-believer. That was his defense of
right,
Christian
belief. Right. So if you believe, if you follow Pascal's logic, you got to go to church every single Sunday. You can't fornicate, can't get drunk. What else can't you do? Can't masturbate.
Carpet, dance, listen to music. Yeah.
Can't get divorced.
But
if God didn't want us to use reason and wanted us to believe, then why did he give us a brain? And I was even asked by a college minister, you know, he said, well, then why did God give us a part of our brain in which we believe in a God and why we have all these human concepts? When I said that the idea of God as a human concept, he's like, well, then why, you know, should we believe? Or why do we believe? Why did God give us that? And I was like, huh? I mean, who said that God even gave us that?
Yeah.
Starts off with a false premise to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, part of the problem I always had, even when I was a believer, was the whole idea of divine hiddenness. You know, I mean, like Miranda says, why, if we were given God-given reason, why the hell do we have to sit there and search him out?
Yeah.
Why is he not a little bit more obvious? I mean, is he, you know, sitting up in his little throne in the sky, just chuckling his little brains out, thinking, what a bunch of little morons running around down on that planet I created, and they can't figure out whether I exist or not.
Oh, it's all free will.
You know, well, I don't believe in free will. But at least not from a Christian point. To a degree, yeah. More desireism, but I'm still...
I would answer that statement with, I'm not sure, but my speculation is that God exists and created a universe. The reason I believe this is that the universe looks created to me, and the reason God remains hidden and silent is to test and teach us. That would be my answer.
Why would he test and teach us for us to, well, okay, let me ask you this. Now, do you follow any parts of the Bible, or do you pretty much throw it away?
I treat the Bible like every other book. Assertions that I agree with, I believe, and assertions that I disagree with, I disbelieve.
Because, see, one of
the Bible, I would say the Bible is about 50% true, 50% false, 90% good or neutral, and 10% evil. I formulated that, though, when I was trying to get along with my Christian family. So maybe the percentages changed if I really looked at
it. I don't even know if I could go with that. For after years of studying the historicity, you know, of any of these books and getting into the study of that, I'm not even sure how we can even believe any of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I believe the Bible, I believe it like I do Homer's Odyssey.
Right. Well, the creation story specifically.
Which one?
Chapter 1, 2, and 3 of Genesis.
Let's just stick with chapter 1, because chapter 2 is a different creation story. All right. Do I believe that? No, I don't.
My question would have been, my problem with a statement like what you made, if you believe in the Genesis story narrative between 1 and 4, is that why would God create us just to fail? Why would God create us to test us when he already knew prior that we were going to fail? Because depending on your belief system and what you believe as far as Christian beliefs, if you read the story, especially in Genesis 1, I mean, you get into a lot of different theological points, but some believe that, you know, even prior to creation, God knew that he was going to have to send Christ for our redemption. Well, then why create us in the first place if we're going to fail? So I think it's, that's why I don't,
I understand, but you're getting into a whole theological thing here. When it comes to Genesis, I think, especially the creation story, I think it's just a bad plagiarism on Gilgamesh.
Right.
Well, here's the other problem I had, with Christianity. Everything was masculine, but when you look at the earth, you have male and female, which made things like Taoism and stuff make a little more sense to me, because everything is male and female. You have a, quote, yin and yang, and are they're like both, like some plants are both male and female.
Androgynous, and, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, you got to understand that the Christianity that we are reacting to is the winner of the Jesus Wars, or the battle for orthodoxy that occurred, 1,500 or so years ago.
Exactly.
Where literally it was a battle zone all around the Mediterranean, and a whole bunch of different groups of people were literally battling for what they thought was the truth, and the winners are the ones who eventually became the Greek Orthodox and Roman Catholic, and then the subsequent divisions from those into the little groups.
You mean all 40,000 of them?
Yeah, exactly. and they're agreed upon versions of holy books.
Mm-hmm.
And this all comes down, and we look at this form of Christianity that we have, and it is definitely paternalistic, but many earlier versions that we have some records on were not as paternalistic.
Well, look at the fresco they just unveiled in the Vatican.
I am not aware of that.
There was it was about 2 weeks ago, and I might get the details a little goofed up, but they just restored a fresco in the Vatican that shows a woman in what you all of us would consider priestly garb. Now, the church obviously said, oh, no, it was a prayer meeting or something. But if you look at it, some people are taking it showing there were female apostles. And if you look at the non-canonical books,
right,
you know, then you have
Gospel of Mary.
Yeah, the Gospel of Mary. So like you were saying, unless you get into the whole history of the development of Christianity and whether it borrowed, morphed, or stole depending on your point of view, the pagan mythologies, like, you know, Gilgamesh.
That was the Book of Genesis, you know, the what I'm talking about. But you're right about borrowing from pagan is nothing more. This is the thing that gets me. The word pagan is used as a pejorative.
Yeah.
And it's really just a Romanist word for meaning country folk religion. Country folk. It's paganism is basically naturalism. It's nature-based religion that most of the world, except for the Abrahamic tradition, which is extremely paternalistic, most of the world had a naturalist viewpoint, and many of them were maternal in the way that they ran things, and the way their society was structured was maternalistic or egalitarian to some degree.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, arguing, you know, talking about the Christianity and our variation of it that we have inherited is almost almost just not even worth the discussion once you get the idea that it is crap.
Yeah,
it's all made up.
I'm going to interject here because we're running out of time.
Oh, okay.
I do want to say that I found two guides that I believe just about everything they say, and that's Carl Sagan and Isaac Asimov. So if they say it, chances are I believe it. And that's one reason why I reject the entire Book of Genesis, pretty much, because it's completely unscientific. And with that, I want to thank Tim for co-hosting. I want to thank our callers for giving us such insightful thoughts and questions. Yes, thank you for calling. And I want to thank our listeners for listening to us. Please tune in next month when we have another episode of God Gave Us Reason, Not Religion.
Hope you enjoyed this presentation. To learn more about deism, please visit www.deism.com. That's deism.com. And visit goddiscussion.com for the latest church and state news, articles, and opinions. The comments and opinions in this broadcast are respected, but do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of other hosts, guests, and/or goddiscussion.com.
In a world where a frightening number of Americans think that man coexisted with dinosaurs 6,000 years ago, where church and state are headed for a collision course, you've got one new source that covers it all. GodDiscussion.com. Go there, comment, bookmark it, spread the word, engage. GodDiscussion.com.